Hey everyone, if you know me, you know that I've been investing in precious metals for many, many years. Once I realized that private banking cartels could drastically manipulate currencies, putting my family savings in jeopardy, I decided to take matters into my own hand and diversify our savings strategy. This is why I buy physical silver and gold and invest in metals through our Roth and 401k, and I only invest with Colonial Metals Group. CMG is the exclusive sponsor of the Shannon Joy Show, and they're helping me set up a safe and secure self-directed IRA where I have access to my assets no matter what the stock market, or for that matter, the government is doing. Let the team of experts at Colonial help you protect your family's future with an extra special offer just for the SJ audience. Click on the link in the description below or call 888-705 0950. That's 888-705-0950, and you'll be eligible to receive a free safe and up to $10,000 in free silver just for the SJ audience. Join me today and take back your power. Secure your wealth with Colonial Metals Group. To the Shannon Joy Show. Well, hello world, and welcome to the Shannon Joy Show. We're broadcasting live from the Joy Virtual Studio right here in the beautiful Finger Lakes region of New York State. It is Monday, February 19th. We are launching yet another very, very busy broadcast week. So good to be with all of you today. We're live on Rumble. Great to see all of you popping on to the live chat. We have Mopar21222 joining us saying, good morning, Shannon and everyone. Bill Benz is with us as well. Please give us a thumbs up, a follow, and a comment on the live chat or the comment section. It helps us with the algorithm right here on Rumble as we continue to organically grow the audience of the Shannon Joy Show. We are self-producing today. So thrilled to be live on Twitter. If you're watching on Twitter right now, please give us a retweet, give us a comment, and a share. Again, because the algorithms are not usually in our favor, that helps us to grow. Thank you to our sponsors and our partners over at Spreely TV. We are live on Roku TV and Apple TV as well. Of course, our partners over at News Radio WHAM 1180. We are reaching between 80 and 100,000 eyes and ears every single week on the Shannon Joy Show. Very exciting. And we could not do it without all of you. Thank you to our sponsors. We're going to be talking about Shell Shock CBD today, an amazing sponsor of the Shannon Joy Show. Also, the Wellness Company. They have a brand new emergency health kit that we're going to talk about on the show as well. We could not come to you every day without our valued and beloved sponsors. So make sure you check out their websites, getwellwithshannonjoy.com. That's getwellwithshannonjoy.com for the Wellness Company. And of course, Shell Shock CBD. If you want to support our independent efforts, please hop over to theshannonjoy.com and throw us a contribution or a donation. That's how we keep the lights on here on this little engine that could. Well, I could not talk about gold lame Trump sneakers without bringing in one of my absolute favorite guests. He is a classically trained economist of the Austrian persuasion. And I just had to talk to Jeffrey Tucker, not only about the economy today in the US, but when I saw the dude on Twitter holding up the gold lame Trump sneaker at the sneaker show, boasting that he paid $9,000 for that pair of sneakers, I'm thinking, what do we have? Like, what does this say about culture? What does this say about, the economics? What does this say about politics today? And I couldn't dive into this topic without bringing my absolute favorite. Jeffrey Tucker is the founder of Brownstone Institute. Follow him on Twitter. His handle is at Jeffrey A. Tucker, and support all their efforts at brownstone.org. Jeffrey, we have a lot to talk to you about today, and we're going to get into some serious topics on the economy, geopolitics, and culture. But I had to start with this. I mean, this is breaking the internet right now. The gold lame sneakers, they're flying off the shelves. What do you make of that phenomenon today, and what does it say about where we are here, third week in February 2024?
I'll caution with the following. I have never understood the sneaker market. It's been around for a long time, and it's always been bizarre to me. I sometimes go into the mall and go to the sneaker stores and just look at these sneakers for $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $6,000, whatever. And I just it's just bizarre to me, but just the strange capacity of the commercial marketplace to. To drive the prices of things up, the status goods, you know, what we would call it like a Veblen good, you know, if you're wearing it, that means you're awesome. How that pertains to sneakers, I just don't entirely understand. But I'm also a little bit, you know, out of touch on this stuff. So, you know, like, but at the same time, I'm noticing that there's this counter trend towards really well-selling classical shoes from the 1930s and 1940s sneakers, you know,
Love
that they
that.
used to, yeah, and that's a big thing. But you know, commercial marketplace is fascinating in that sense, just the extent to which it's driven by genuine demand, but then also infused with this sort of clamor for social status, you know, and the interaction of those two things in terms of prices is a fascinating thing. That's intrigued economists for a very long time, at least a century. But I will say this about Trump sneakers. My first thought was this is exactly what he should be doing. I mean, this is how he made his money was like branding things and being a personality and riding that, you know, to riches and fame and then playing off that. I mean, it's you could say it's kind of disgusting, but it's just kind of a reality of the world. But Trump has always been very good at that. I would say he's much better at that than he has been at, for example, managing government.
Well, to your point, I do think this is a bellwether for the election at large. Many people asking, is this really an election or is this a marketing shtick? Is this a money-making operation? We now have the Trump Victory 24 cologne, the Trump gold lame sneakers, which everyone at Fox News breathlessly reporting that this is how Trump is going to penetrate the urban black market. So this is how he's going to go in and get those young African American voters who are going to turn out in droves for him on, you know, November in November of 2024. Is this really about saving the country? Is this really about fixing the existential problems that are plaguing the United States of America at the same time that this fellow is purchasing $9,000 sneakers? People are not able to pay their grocery bills or afford groceries. In fact, Jeffrey, I mentioned Tucker Carlson was in Russia, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on the program too, that interview with Elon and his trip to the grocery store, which became somewhat of a cultural phenomenon. You know, I mentioned he was blown away by the little quarter in the grocery cart that opens it up. I've been shopping at Aldi's for my family. I have a big family, five people, large children, athletes. They eat a lot, and we've been crushed by grocery bills, inflation at the grocery store. And so we have the super froofy, fancy Wegmans here that was, you know, founded in Rochester, New York. But we've been going to Aldi's lately because the prices are just so much better.
Well, you know, you say that as if, you know, it's a mark against you or something. Shopping at Aldi just means you're smart. I don't understand. I've never understood. I mean, why people go to Whole Foods when you can get the same thing at Aldi,
I
or
know.
the
I know.
equivalent? Once you get it home and get it in the fridge, you know, a tomato is a tomato. Whole Foods has wild premiums, you know, a 50, I don't know, 50% or something, just so that you can what, listen to Schubert and hang around people of your same social class.
The
I've never
experience is
understood.
lovely. I have to confess, the experience is lovely. But you know what? The bottom line is more important to the Joy
Well,
family
that's what
right
you're
now. We got
paying
kids in
for.
U.S. school.
That's what you're paying for at the Fancy Pants grocery store. You're paying for to be around your people, to be seen. to listen
I will tell you,
fancy music.
there's no shame in my game, Jeffrey Tucker. I have no
Okay.
problem going to Aldi, and it's the difference. I will just tell you, it's the difference between dropping $270 for a week of groceries and dropping 160, 170. I mean, the difference is that it's, I mean, so, but that, you know, here we have a situation where it seems once again the political infrastructure, Democrats and Republicans, in this case, Republicans, just are not taking seriously what is happening to the American people and our
Oh, that's for
culture,
sure.
our economy. And it's really frustrating to watch, to see now this political campaign take this term. It looks like a massive marketing operation. A lot of people are going to make money. There's going to be a lot of grift going on here. And my question is, are the American people really going to fall for this? Because I think if the money spigot is turned off, if they're like, you know what, I'm not going to get the Trump playing cards, I'm going to skip the Trump socks, I'm not going to get the cologne, and that kind of falls flat because of market pressures and economic pressures, maybe we can get to some semblance of sanity. But I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know either, and I think your observation is a good one. It is kind of peculiar to see the Trump campaign tapping into the, sort of this trend towards so-called doom spending, which is, people can't afford something, but they also don't believe in the future, and they think that we're existentially threatened and actually don't care. I mean, we've achieved a kind of popular nihilism stage of American history after the last 4 years of just being pummeled to death and being told the Constitution doesn't matter, law doesn't matter, nothing's normal anymore, nobody cares. People are spending their last dime on just living a good life or trolling the elites or whatever. Meanwhile, the credit card bills are going through the roof and you're paying 22% on your revolving accounts. I mean, it's a kind of that plays into the very nihilism that the ruling class seem to be promoting in their shock and awe of March 2020. And it's a genuine catastrophe. I mean, you look at the savings rates in this country, they're down to, I guess, 3.7%. They're actually falling, which is bizarre because we are seeing now in real terms the first real positive return on money held in essentially 20, almost 25 years, a quarter
So
of a
what you're
century.
saying, just so people understand, so you, if I were to put money in a savings account, I could actually get a decent, somewhat of a return on
Yeah,
it.
in real terms, adjusted for inflation, you can actually make 1, 2, 3% on your money per year at existing increases in price indices. So this, in other words, this should be the time when you would see soaring inflation and a dramatic decline in retail spending, right? I mean, that's the way, as a way of kind of stocking up. This is how markets work. They signal people know what to do. So you stock up savings capital. That savings capital is used for investment of various terms, and then that pans out in the form of future consumption because people have resources and so on. And that is enabled by the interest rate as a signal. Here's what you should do. Here's your sign. It's not required, but here's what's smart to do. But instead of seeing less consumption and more savings leading to long-term investment, we're seeing even given the positive rate of return on even the shortest term investments in money markets, we're seeing a decline in individual savings. And that's just because the resources are gone and also this kind of doom spending nihilism that's afflicted an entire generation. It's contrary to everything you would predict. And it just, I think, it represents a kind of a grave demoralization that's happened in light of the Great Reset.
Well, and everything that we're dealing with today really does, it started with the great lockdowns of 2020 and all of the suppressions placed on natural markets and natural human functioning by the great resetters. Now, as we move into this 2024 election year, as our political candidates try to ignore it again, it's this very bizarre the Emperor's New Clothes type of feel,
Yeah.
where everyone's parading around. They're dropping $10,000 on Super Bowl tickets, $15,000 on Taylor Swift
Astounding.
tickets, the gold shoes, right? And both the political parties are so unserious, right? And just almost mocking of the reality of the situation. We have a crisis at the border. We delved into that heavily with Michael Yon last week on the Shannon Joy Show. We have, a cultural crisis, rampant crime, and then the economic crisis, looming. And it's this sense that, it is bread and circuses, where people are just so the. Everything is so unnatural, and everything is so unpredictable that people are just kind of grasping here and there. And I think that kind of can, and again, the uncertainty of the election in 24, it's just a bizarre time. It's a VUCA. There's this old military term called VUCA. It's a, and they use it in corporate, corporate trainings these days too. It's like a VUCA situation, volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity, right? And they say it's like in those situations, I mean, this is when you need to be flexible. You need to be paying attention, looking for patterns, and but that's where I
Well,
think we are.
and the problem is that the chaos is just beginning. Like, we have no idea how much fakery has been generated over the last 4 years. And I mean, there's a number of things that have happened. I mean, one is that there's a widespread public awareness that our once trusted institutions have completely failed us. Okay, so that's and that when you put it that way, it sounds like, oh yeah, no kidding. But actually, it's very serious, because when you lose trust in academia, government, media, all major corporations, financial institutions, all that happens, and medicine, right? So that means that every single sector of expertise in society is now being discredited. That is a serious issue. We've never kind of lived in this world before. We just didn't know. I saw Naomi Wolf posted a meme the other day. It said, "When at what point in your life did you realize that everything is bullshit?" It was so funny. And she said, "When I turned 58." And it's like, I thought I've been looking for the words to describe, the essence of it, and that is sort of weirdly the essence of it. But so that's happening even as we're experiencing these dramatic changes, and that's really going to profoundly affect all of our lives. That is being reported by the media, but underplayed in strange ways. And you have to kind of look beneath the headlines and look at the actual data. And I'd give you countless examples, whether it's the fake GDP data, the fake jobs numbers, the fake inflation data, which, by the way, this la and just a quick foray into that. Last week, there came out in quick succession the CPI and the PPI both turned out to be much hotter than anybody expected. Like, we're experiencing a re-acceleration of inflation. Okay, so that ruins the Federal Reserve's plans and introduces the possibility that as we go into next year and the following year, we're going to see a repeat of the 1970s, where we had three great waves of inflation. We might have just experienced the first one of three. Okay, so that's a weird possibility. But the initial headline in the CPI was inflation cools. That was the Wall Street Journal. Okay, that was not believable. So by the end of the day, they changed it to inflation is red hot. Okay, so there's a big distance between cools and red hot,
That's Orwellian. That's Orwellian. That's
yeah,
like
it was.
the headline changing within the span of 12 hours.
Yeah,
Like it
it was
went into the
crazy. And
incinerator. Oh my gosh.
I understand the reporters are idiots, but this is a little bit much. And then 2 days later, the PPI comes out, which, I mean, in terms of significance for your life, the CPI and the PPI are very correlated. I mean, the one covers the prices of retail and the other covers the wholesale prices of the people who give you retail goods or themselves paying. So it's a forecast of what's coming down the line. So the PPI comes out 2 days later. And it was even worse than the CPI number, which means that they're forecasting, say, 4 to 6 months from now, that the CPI is still going to get progressively worse, right? So there's no concrete of inflation, contrary to everything you've been hearing for not just 2 months, 3 months, but like basically 3 years. But here's the thing, that PPI number was never reported at all by the Wall Street Journal. Not one story on it. And forget the New York Times and the rest of the mainstream press. It wasn't anywhere. You had to dig really deeply into the business and financial press even to find it. Or you can go to X where you can find anything. But the PPI was literally just ignored, like it didn't even matter. It was crazy. So I've started to read the news now with a kind of a decoder ring. I'm sure you do the same thing. And so if you ever see the mainstream corporate press reporting something that looks a little bit not so good, there's a chance that it's actually a calamity.
Well, and I think to your point, though, I think everyone senses this. This is the bizarre state of 2024, at least in Europe. We're going to go to break real quick. And then when I come back, I want to get your thoughts on the farmers' revolt in Europe. At least in Europe, there is a natural reaction to what is being done to them that makes sense, right? In Europe, they're dumping manure on government buildings, shutting down roads, protesting, rolling protests 6 to 8 weeks. Like, you can agree with it or disagree with it, but it makes sense, right? Because they want us in 200 square foot apartments, eating bugs and owning nothing. Like, that's what they want for us. So the natural human response is, screw you. I don't want that. Here in the US, we're just strangely anesthetized. It's like we're stunned and we're, I don't, it's just so
Yeah,
bizarre.
we're at the very beginnings of the loss of trust, but it's got a long way to go.
So let's play that out. I want to game plan with you a little bit. We're looking at the bigger picture today with Jeffrey Tucker. He is the founder of Brownstone Institute, actually mentioned by our good friend Vigilant Fox over the weekend in a great post that I retweeted called Three Reasons Why the COVID Resistance Deserves the Nobel Prize. And he went through those dark days. It was based on a piece that was originating at Brownstone Institute. Jeffrey was one of the guys that organized the Great Barrington Declaration, which was one of those bright moments. If you guys remember the red box reporting from VAERS, remember those, the openvaers.com, and the Great Barrington Declaration that finally gave voice to people who were criticizing, COVID lockdowns and the legitimacy of it, with people like Dr. Jay Bhattacharya and Milton Kohldorff. That was Jeffrey Tucker. The original resistance started out of people that were on Twitter active. You were one of them. Please support all of their efforts over at Brownstone Institute. They're one of the originals in that resistance. That's brownstone.org, brownstone.org. And of course, follow Jeffrey on Twitter. His handle is at Jeffrey A. Tucker. We're going to get to a lot of the news of the day. I want to get your feelings on what is going on in Europe. Definitely the Elon, or I'm sorry, the Tucker Carlson, Vladimir Putin interview, which I thought was very, very interesting. Geopolitical ramifications of that. And the emergence of, I really want to talk to you about the emergence of Elon Musk as a seeming kingmaker. He is
Sure. I
everywhere
mean,
these
it's,
days.
yeah.
Yeah,
All
and I
right,
want to
let's
get
do
your
it.
thoughts on that. So we're gonna take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion with our very good friend, Jeffrey Tucker. Thanks for listening to the Shannon Joy Show. We'll be right back. As you all know, the Joy family is super sporty. We all play volleyball. The kids are playing beach volleyball in the summer, high school volleyball in the fall. And right now we are traveling across the country almost every weekend, different city every weekend, playing club volleyball. And the kids need good nutrition. Very difficult to be healthy on the road. Sometimes they're playing, up to 5 games a day, 10 games in a weekend. And they need the vitamins and minerals. They need the nutrition. And I'm so thrilled to partner up with Field of Greens so that they can get all of the vitamins and the nutrients and the nutrition that they need to supplement their regular diet and keep them full of energy and healthy on the court. Also, healing after these long tournaments is really important. And the product line over at Field of Greens is fantastic. It is an easy way to make sure that your family is getting the nutrients that they need, all natural, every single day. Go to fieldofgreens.com. That's fieldofgreens.com. And plug in the promo code Shannon. You can check out their whole lineup of products. And if you put in that promo code Shannon, you'll get 15% off your order. So we're super excited to partner up with them and looking forward to a super healthy 2023.
New details tonight on the 1963 assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. The alleged assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald, was involved in a CIA operation 3 months before the assassination.
This project was said to be a covert CIA operation that was developing a top-secret vaccine and or a biological weapon.
What they're doing is they're trying to kill Castro.
I'm just a patsy.
In 1963, the world was a powder keg ready to explode. With the CIA holding a match to fuses on every continent. From Vietnam to Cuba, clandestine operations were being waged to preserve a fascist New World Order, which emerged from the ashes of the Third Reich. Assassination teams within the CIA had their eyes on two sitting heads of state. Fidel, a few years earlier, had survived an agency-led coup d'etat. The other head of state, President John F. Kennedy, had scuttled that attempted overthrow and pledged to dismantle the agency, which was already planning his demise. U.S. soil was no longer sacred nor safe from the murderous reach of the CIA, which now reached ambitiously into the heartland of America and into the bayous of New Orleans.
Not me, however, I'm a communist.
A young girl found herself caught up in a clandestine covert operation to eliminate Fidel Castro. This wouldn't be a shot heard around the world, but rather a silent shot of super cancer-causing poison derived from a monkey simian virus called SV40. A team of fascists hell-bent on defeating communism, directed by the CIA, was formed in New Orleans. This den of vipers included the head of the National Cancer Society, the FBI's former head agent in mafia-controlled Chicago, and a paramilitary instructor who would bring in a double agent named Lee Harvey Oswald. This tale has everything from murder, espionage, a tragic love story, to bioweapons and the genesis of gain-of-function research. At the end of this, we'll have one dead doctor, multiple dead agents, and a dead president. I'm Shannon Joy. Stay tuned as I take you through the full story. Welcome back, everyone. We are so thankful for our sponsors over at The Wellness Company. Real quick, you're going to hear about them a little bit later in the program, but they have a great new emergency kit available that has everything in a VUCA society: volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. You never know what they're going to throw at you next. And there's a lot of sickness going around, a lot of illness, still big questions about the lab origin of the COVID-19 virus. And so, you know, people are nervous. It's nice to have emergency medications on hand, ready to go at your fingertips. And you get that peace of mind with the Wellness Company emergency kit. And I have one myself. I rustled it up for you. This is what it looks like. Very easy to get. I've had this for quite, can you see it? There we go. And it has everything. It has hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, budesonide, a free nebulizer in their newer contagion emergency kit that you can get at getwellwithshannonjoy.com. That's getwellwithshannonjoy.com. Make sure you use the promo code Shannon Joy, they have a first aid kit. They have an emergency kit with ivermectin, and then they have their specialized contagion emergency kit. And that's the one that includes all of it. So the hydroxychloroquine, the nebulizer, the ivermectin, and a host of other medications to treat all sorts of illnesses, including respiratory illnesses effectively. It also comes obviously with their staff, their team of medical doctors. We're so thankful for Dr. Peter McCullough and Dr. Mackis, who has been on the Shannon Joy Show. They just brought in Dr. Drew, which is pretty cool as well, as a spokesperson. And we're just thankful for everything they do, that parallel system set up to treat people. So get well with ShannonJoy.com. Get well with ShannonJoy.com. Make sure you use that promo code ShannonJoy. Jeffrey Tucker with us today. Old friend of the Shannon Joy Show. He's the founder of Brownstone Institute. His Twitter is at Jeffrey A. Tucker, talking about a very volatile 2024. You know, we're still reeling from COVID. It's not being addressed in this country, and we're moving now towards a deteriorating economic reality for more and more Americans. Again, neither political parties are talking about it. And it looks as if we're going to go into, you know, a couple interesting interviews by Tucker Carlson that are addressing some of these issues. And I want to get your thoughts on some of those bigger stories and bigger topics of the day in context of what you're doing over at Brownstone and all of your great writers and thinkers and analysts. So let's start with, you know, we've talked about the overall state of the economy. Bad. Right. What do you see that in the terms of the overall state of the electorate, our quote unquote democracy, and our ability to have an election that is legitimate, that people believe in, a changing in the hands of power in November of 24? You know, what is your kind of broad 40,000 foot, you know, view of where we're going to be going in the next 6 to 8 months?
I never thought I would live in a time where people would really fundamentally question whether or not we have real elections in this country, or whether or not they would even happen at all, which is, you know. But there's no question that the manipulation that went on in 2020 over the election has discredited many features of our civic order and our basic assumptions of what it means to live in a constitutional democracy. You know, I'm fascinated by this because after the election occurred, I mean, I too lived through this moment, this weird moment of going to bed at midnight and seeing Trump the overwhelming victor, and then waking up in the morning and seeing that he was the overwhelming loser, right? And
right.
And saw the betting odds go swing all the way to 100% to 0%. You know, while you slept,
right?
It was a very strange thing, and I found it extremely tacky that, you know, Trump immediately went out with, "Oh, the election was stolen." I thought, you know, that's not very sporting of you, even if there was unfairness and that sort of thing.
Right.
You know, nobody ever likes the guy who loses at the pool table and accuses the other guy of cheating, or, you know, the baseball player is always screaming at the umpire. And so, you know, we don't like that. We don't think that's playing fair. But the more time has gone on, the more I'm starting to understand that there was a lot of stakes in that election. And I get now why there was so much, not just outrage from Trump, but and why it is that his closest followers have been in this nonstop sort of frenzy ever since. Because it didn't just speak to precisely what happened on election night, but to the whole structure of how America operates and whether and to what extent the people actually do control their own government through the system of representative democracy. Is that still functioning or not? I can't believe, you know, that we're having to worry about that, but there's every reason to worry about that.
It's very interesting, the recent interview over the weekend. Tucker Carlson has done, they've been making some serious moves. Tucker and Elon have been making some serious moves from my perspective over the past couple weeks. Heading over to Russia to interview Putin. I mean, that's no small feat. I think Elon was probably involved with that. But this recent interview with Mike Benz, who is a cybersecurity expert, is going completely viral. on Twitter, promoted by Elon Musk, by the way. Elon Musk has basically made Mike Benz a multimillionaire. You know, he tweeted out, you know, follow this guy, $5 a month on his website, we'll support him. That was retweeted 17 million times, Jeffrey. Yep. So Elon has the capacity to make superstars, create superstars. And I think we're seeing this with Tucker. But what was interesting with me, this was a very interesting interview about the stolen election, but also mass censorship. This is just a leviathan of very well-funded organizations, non-governmental, governmental, some of them starting within the CIA and the FBI, but being exported into Department of, or I'm sorry, in to well, Department of Homeland Security, but also health administrations within Washington, D.C., okay? And he lays out this, like, terrifying story as if it's new. And I'm listening to him retell this story about the censorship in the context of how it screwed Trump in the election, which it probably did. But the larger story is that the apparatus had been being built in earnest during 2017, 18, and was completely weaponized and deployed by Trump himself via executive order and the signing on of the PREP Act and the CARES Act. So it's this weaponized government that Trump unleashed on himself. Yeah. And now using that, what I came away with from that Tucker Carlson interview was not a good feeling, Jeffrey, of, oh, well, now we know this. The feeling that I came away with was, then why are you even running? Why is Trump even running in this election? Yeah,
well, like, how can we trust him? Go ahead. I mean, not to get too dark about it, but he might be running precisely to cover up his own role in this. Sorry to put it that way, but I think that there's something very strange happened.
Right.
In the spring of 2020, if not before. I think, you know, like if Benz covers the creation of the cybersecurity and infrastructure security system, which is basically a CIA division within Department of Homeland Security, that was responsible for not just censorship and downplaying the problem of ballot fraud, you know, in light of mail-in ballots and that sort of thing, but also it was CISA that divided the workforce between essential and non-essential.
Yes.
This became a very, very powerful, the most powerful federal agency, and it was clearly operated by the intelligence community, and it was created under Trump. So,
Andrew Lowenthal has been reporting on this and blowing the whistle on this for many, many years. Tracy Beans has been blowing on the whistle. We have the lawsuit of what was interesting to me was that this story that we've been talking about for many years as being a big problem has just been recast into another.
Yeah,
Trump
and I have to
narrative.
Say, Mike Benz was very articulate and very precise. Actually,
it was good.
The interview he did with Tucker Carlson was very good, and he has this gift of the gab like I've never quite seen before. It's actually very impressive.
Yeah.
But his interview a year ago with Yanya Kellek was even better on the issues that I'm really interested in. So you'll see what happened. Not to get us too far afield here, but you'll see what happened when Benz brought up the role of COVID controls in kicking off mass censorship, in particular about vaccine effectiveness and masks and social distancing and all this kind of stuff. So what was interesting to me is that Tucker immediately bounced from that topic back to election integrity issues, right?
Yeah.
And
you know, I noticed that.
Look, you know, and I appreciate Tucker. There's no question in my mind that for whatever reason, he doesn't want too much drill down on this subject. And,
no, he doesn't.
Well, I could put it another way. I think he does want drill down on the topic, but he doesn't want to be the one to do it. So he keeps inviting these various experts and things and that are hinting at stuff and then shuts them off and lets them go on their way. But I'm suspicious that Tucker wants the truth out there, but he doesn't want to be the one to broadcast it, mainly because I've just put a fine point on it because of his own role. You know,
certainly. Yeah.
And the middle of March with his engagement with national security officials and that sort of thing. So that is a peculiar aspect of all this. But if you listen to the Jan Jurkelek interview, Jan does not have this problem. And so just let Benz go on about this. And it's a much more detailed discussion of the relationship between the national security state and the COVID response. And it's actually better. But you look, the two of them together, or yes, you're right, it's an aggregate of what many, many other people have sort of discovered, but he has a way of putting it.
Very articulately.
And I think it's a brilliant that the interview is viral, because like, it's the problem that you have and I have is like, we know all these things. We write articles, we do podcasts, we get them out of it, but we're still frustrated that we're having a hard time getting the word out. It's very difficult to impact the public mind and make things known. I mean, no matter how much you say it, it's still not known. So I was thrilled that this interview got a lot of attention. But, you know, I mean, even then, I'm on an academic list, and one of these guys, an academic list of, I guess, COVID critics are just, you know,
whatever.
It's not exactly ferocious. I mean, when I said academic, that tells you I need to know. but somebody was recommending the Mike Benz interview, and a major public intellectual responded, "Look, I'm very busy. I don't have time to listen to some damn interview. Can you just summarize the top 3 points with evidence, like right here, so I can just..." And I didn't respond to it, but in my mind, I was thinking, you know, being a public intellectual comes with a lot of responsibilities, the number one of which is to know things. And to take the time to get to know really significant, important research that's out there. But, you know, here we have this top guy who's like, "Hey, I'm too busy for this." So that's really tragic. So people really need to take the time to listen and actually read the transcripts and listen again to see.
Yeah.
Exactly the fullness of the plot here. And part of the problem is that it's hard to believe. I mean, it really is hard to believe just how much was deployed at the same time. I mean, the attempt to create a new platform technology for pharma, you know, or complete with digital surveillance and vaccine passports to subsidize the online learning industry, to cartelize the media and dissidents, you know, and you could just go through the list to get everybody driving an EV in a 15-minute city. I mean, like, every terrible thing you can ever imagine was all shoved into one stupid package and also, not to mention, fix elections so you would never again have things like a Trump victory in 2016 or Brexit in England or any other serious popular movement, so that the administrative state and their industrial cronies could, you know, rule the world forever. I mean, that is, in brief, is what we're talking about here. And it's so far-fetched and so crazy that it seems like it couldn't possibly be true. So, you know, we are right to ask for evidence, but the problem is that the evidence is by now overwhelming that it is true.
Thanks for listening to the Shannon Joy Show. We'll be right back. Hey guys, I am so psyched to be working with the folks over at Colonial Metals Group. You guys know that I am all about personal empowerment, never living in fear or waiting for some politician to save you. Being at the whim of the stock market or the current administration does not make me feel safe or secure. But having a self-directed IRA where I can safely store physical gold and silver, assets that have stood the test of time, makes a lot of sense to me. Let the team of experts at CMG help you protect your family's future. Maybe you're just getting started. Maybe you're already in a 401k or an IRA, or maybe you're thinking about your parents' retirement. Regardless of your situation, Colonial Metals Group can help. We put together a special offer for this audience. Click on the link in the description below or call 888-705-0950. That's 888-705-0950, and you'll be eligible to receive a free safe and up to $10,000 in free silver. Don't sit around waiting for a politician to save you. Save yourself, protect your wealth, and call Colonial Metals Group today. Well, and that's that. This is the bizarre state that we're describing today, where we are buried under a mountain of evidence and statistics and data about the reality of the situation here in the U.S., yet we are immobilized, anesthetized, paralyzed to inaction as we move into this election season between two candidates, both of which did this to us in 2021 and 2021. And the gatekeepers continuing, right? We hail Tucker Carlson for escaping from Fox News, and now he's emancipated and free on Twitter. But yet he's still presenting these stories in the context of that paradigm. That was my only criticism of this interview
everything gets channeled into this political, and it's a huge distraction because whether you're for or against Trump or, you know, whatever, it really doesn't matter. What's at stake here are the very foundations of civilization, science, human rights, and freedom. I mean, that's what's at stake. It's not really about Trump and his tennis shoes and personality or Biden's, you know, inability to put a sentence together. It really is about civilization itself. That's the essential battle. And all these political debates and things are really a distraction. I get your frustration. I get upset when everything gets filtered through this. And what's interesting to me is how the elites have manipulated people's political loyalties to get them to believe insane things. And this is what happened with the lockdowns, all right? So do you want to lock down the economy? No. Well, wait, Trump wants to. Oh, well, then it must be good.
Right.
And then, well, Trump wants to open up. Oh, well, that means lockdowns. We should have lockdowns. I mean, anything that Trump's for, I'm against. Anything he does, I'm for. You know, it's just...
Remember the last refuse? They're like, we're not going to take Trump's vaccine. It's dangerous.
That's what I was going to mention. So in the fall of 2020, even though the vaccine had been pre-approved by the military for mass distribution, and a lot of people knew this, you still, there was a danger, I guess, that the vaccine was going to come out before the election. So you had all the top people from Peter Hotez to Anthony Fauci to CDC and Birx, everybody putting down the vaccine. Oh, I wouldn't take this vaccine. This thing could be dangerous. Everybody was saying it. I mean, just like I made a list the other day of, and it was every single powerful voice in public health was casting aspersions on the vaccine. You don't want to use a vaccine in the middle of a pandemic.
Unbelievable.
Untested vaccines, I wouldn't really trust them. They can rewire your immune system. They were saying all this stuff in September and October of 2020. And then
when it was Trump's vaccine.
And then Fauci himself intervened in the Moderna trial. And because they were ready to release this thing. I mean, they were ready to release it long before the election,
right?
But they so the regulatory authorities had to delay it, and so Fauci did this, and he sent Moderna back to trials under the most implausible excuse. He said, "Yeah, you know, I don't think it's quite ready because I don't see enough racial diversity in your test cohort here. This will never fly. We need more Black people basically included in your tests." And that's that. And they're like,
okay,
that's weird. We're in the middle of a pandemic. We have the vaccine ready to distribute. We believe it's going to make everything better. But you, Anthony Fauci, are delaying this. So sure enough, it was because of Fauci's direct. I'm not saying anything speculative here, by the way. There's evidence for every bit of what I'm saying. Okay. I wouldn't be saying it otherwise. Fauci directly intervened to delay the vaccine rollout until after the election.
Unbelievable.
And then as soon as it was rolled out, everybody who had previously warned against the vaccine went all in. Not just this is the greatest product in human history, it's 95% effective and that kind of stuff. But then within a matter of months, we started seeing the mandates and whole cities closed to the vaccine. I mean, it was so extreme.
And on a dime.
And we're watching this. It's no wonder people are feeling disoriented and confused. And like, how do you live in a world where, you know, a truth becomes an untruth?
And like that. Just,
well, overnight. And yesterday's lies become today's truths, you know, overnight. Totally based on political alliances.
It'll like explode your, it, honestly, it's, I think it's a form of psychological warfare, to be honest. I think that this is a deployed technique. It's a, it is a gaslighting technique. But to your point though, so then you had, we literally had 3.5 years of Republicans and conservatives raging against this vaccine, raging. Okay. And then fast forward to the 2023-24 presidential primaries. And it's like, well, we all forgot about the vaccine. We're going to nominate the father of the vaccine. And it wasn't really that bad. And he didn't really mean it. Right back to the guy, the originator of it, through Operation Warp Speed, Trump. So we see this come full circle. It's like it plagues both sides of the political aisles. Yeah.
It's been very strange. I wondered how in the world Trump was ever going to survive his COVID response. I mean, I didn't believe it would happen.
I know how it happened. They paid everyone off. Yeah.
Well, they paid everybody off. But the, you know, what would be the line that? And so, sure enough, the line was, Trump never locked down. He left it up to the states. Okay. Yeah. We have hours of video evidence and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of pages of documents.
Yeah.
And not to mention like real lived history that refute that claim. I mean, we know for sure. It's completely true. But you say it enough, and there are people who believe it, and it tremendously demoralizes me. To you know, every time I write about what happened, March 13th, 2020, and following, all the way to the end of Trump's term, that there will always be some people who say, no, that's completely untrue. He left it up to the states. Even though on military bases he closed the churches, you know,
he did everything.
Moratorium. I mean, Glenn Beck the other day tweeted out that proof that Biden is the dictator was the rental moratorium. Well, my friend Glenn, this was not a Biden program. It was a Trump program. And so just the state of denial, and you know, Glenn Beck's the real deal, and
he's the real deal. Jeffrey Tucker, I just want to pause you because we got to go to a break for a moment because I want to move this into the Elon realm as well. But I think that the overall theme here, I mean, from my perspective, what I'm hearing from you, you cannot legitimately analyze what has happened over the past 3 years, the culpability, the responsibility, without critically looking at both political parties, both Republicans and Democrats, both Trump and Biden. And I feel like anyone who doesn't look at it holistically and cumulatively is engaging in a limited hangout for whatever reason, whether it's party loyalties or marketing. I will tell you, I know there's a huge theme out there that I was subjected to months ago, that Trump is the moneymaker. So if you're a commentator, a host, a platform, an aggregator, an influencer on social media or mainstream news media, the money is in Trump. And you can see that with the cologne, with the sneakers, with the economic feel of the campaign, more than a political campaign, but more, you know, it's a marketing campaign, really. And so I think that there are some, you know, different reasons for this. And I think some people really just believe in him. I'm not sure why, but I just think that, you know, hopefully there will be enough people that can look at this from both perspectives and present that fair story. And I just don't think that we're seeing it quite yet. So if you want to just finish that off and, you know, in a minute, we'll go to break. And then I want to ask you about Elon, because he's emerging on the scene as a major political force, geopolitical force, even in you know, the most recent interview between Tucker Carlson and Putin. So I want to get your thoughts on that. But quick to close out this line of thinking.
You know, and the most sincere explanation I can have for why people continue to not deal honestly with the calamity of the first term of Trump is because they think that Biden's worse. And we have to do something to save civilization. We don't have time. for this kind of scrupulous adherence to truth exactly. and facts, we all have to become part of the propaganda machinery. Mm-hmm. And which I think it's, you know, which I've had people tell me this. Many people have told me this. You just become part of the machine. Don't tell me about your facts. You know, you know this kind of focus on Trump is going to actually help Biden and make everything work. You know, not everything has to be reduced down to strategy and a cynical attempt at manipulating the public. You know, I mean, we need some role in this world for just old-fashioned truth. And I think that's ultimately, as you know, scripture tells us, is what's going to set us free, not these maneuverings and strategies and things.
Yeah, Jeffrey Tucker, the truth will set us free. And that's why your platform is one of the best. It is one that I depend on every single day for show prep. Please go to brownstone.org, brownstone.org. Support Jeffrey and his team and everything that they're doing over there, because they are one of the very few institutions that is looking at everything from that holistic 40,000 foot vantage point. Equally critical of both parties, equally critical of competing institutions. And that's, I think, what we need moving forward. Follow him on Twitter. His handle is @Jeffrey A. Tucker. When we come back, we're going to continue this discussion. I want to talk about Elon, the emerging kingmaker. What your thoughts are, Jeffrey, as we move into a whole new world of politics in 2024. We will be back in a minute right here on the Shannon Joy Show. Hey, everyone. Just want to pause for a moment to thank our sponsors over at Shell Shock CBD. That is shellshockcbd.com. Make sure you use the promo code ShannonJoy for 10% off all of their products. We love this company, and I want to draw your attention today to a study that I found from 2014 published at NIH. This is a double-blind randomized placebo-controlled parallel group study of THC CBD spray and peripheral neuropathic pain treatment. And in the conclusion of this study, they found, and I quote, "These findings demonstrate that in a meaningful proportion of otherwise treatment-resistant patients, clinically important improvements in pain, sleep quality, and SGIC of the severity of their condition are obtained with the THC CBD spray." So as you know, we've been talking about the medicinal benefits of CBD. I use a non-THC CBD product called Rackout from Shellshock CBD that has me sleeping like a baby. And there are more and more studies out there showing that CBD is a really great alternative for people who want to stay off pharmaceutical products. And that's why I love the folks over at Shell Shock CBD. They have a whole variety of tinctures and creams and gummies and CBD products, both THC and non-THC, which is what I use, that are helping people to ease a whole variety of problems, whether it's stress, anxiety, sleeplessness, or even pain. They have the topical cream called Topical Thunder that people swear by. The reviews are fantastic. And as I've mentioned, the Rackout gummies, which is what I use when I can't sleep. It's an amazing product. I would love for you guys to try it out. If you go to shellshockcbd.com, that's shellshockcbd.com, you can get some of their products, the gummies particularly, in sample packs so that you don't have to buy and invest in the whole product. You can try it out, see it if you like it. And as John Burke always says, if you are not completely satisfied, they always give you a 100% money back guarantee. That is how confident they are in their products over at Shellshock CBD. So please support the companies that support the Shannon Joy Show. Go to shellshockcbd.com right now, today. Put in that promo code Shannon Joy and begin to experience the benefits of the medicinal benefits of Shellshock CBD. We'll be back in a moment. And we are back. We are here. It's me, Shannon Joy. We are live on Rumble, live on Twitter, live on Spreely TV. Thank you, everyone. The live chat is heating up. You guys are amazing. CJP Rumble is with us, Nug202, Vidana, Future Shock 33, a new contributor on the live chat right here on Rumble. We are so close to getting over 200 live viewers right now on just Rumble alone, which is really exciting. If you guys can give us a thumbs up, shoot us a follow on Rumble, make a comment in the live chat or in the comment section, that's going to help us get over to 200. So we are, we're over 200 viewers right now. You guys are amazing. We continue to grow little by little organically every day right here in the Shannon Joy Show, because we've made the decision, you know, pertaining to what Jeffrey said in the last segment, I've made the decision to really lead with truth. And sometimes that gets you in trouble. And sometimes it doesn't make you as sexy and as attractive as the other big presenters on the big news networks and the big platforms. But you know what? I can kiss my kids at night and I can look myself in the mirror and know that I'm not ever lying to any of you, and I'm always pursuing the truth. And so it's a little bit trickier to grow when you put that at the fore, but I think it is absolutely worth it. We are joined today by one of my absolute favorites. You must follow Jeffrey A. Tucker on Twitter. Jeffrey A. Tucker is his handle. He's the founder of Brownstone Institute, a collection of some of the most brilliant thinkers on the face of the planet. And these are people who are allowed to debate and have discourse and disagree. I've been to some of your gatherings, Jeffrey, and they're robust. I mean, there is discourse there. You are a lover of free speech, even when people disagree with you. And that's one of the things that I really appreciate about you. It's why what you do is so very, very special and needs to be supported. Brownstone.org. That is brownstone.org. Jeffrey, I want to delve into, we are talking about censorship. We're talking about mass media. We're talking about controlled media, industry capture, institution capture, mainstream news media, then pushing out into social media, which as Mike Benz explained in his interview with Tucker Carlson, really, really jump-started the attempt to really control social media commentary and public thought through this vast governmental apparatus. And so now, though, it seems, Jeffrey, Facebook fell apart, YouTube fell apart, mainstream news media fell apart, radio, television, in terms of COVID-19 and context of, you know, all of the media institutions failed us, right and left, all of them. They all, in some ways, engaged in censorship. All of them. And so now, Jeff, we were all shoved into this special, special place. It's like a free speech oasis amidst a sea of censorship and controlled messages. And that little space is called Twitter. And Twitter is run by Elon. And Elon has now emerged as this almost supranational leader of industry. In fact, in the interview between Tucker Carlson and Putin, it was very clear there was only one person that Putin mentioned towards the end of that interview that he would negotiate with. And it was Elon. It wasn't Biden. It wasn't funny. Trump. It wasn't.
That's interesting.
It was Elon needed to be. So it's, so my question to you,
yeah,
is,
that's great,
is he the new de facto leader of the United States of America? And
that
if so, go.
It's, yeah. It's amazing because, yes, he's, you know, one of the wealthiest people in the world, the wealthiest outside of sovereign funds and that sort of thing.
Right.
But he got that way by thinking disruptively. Like he has this weirdly good intuition about what's going on, what could be wonderful. So he does the rocket thing and the Skylink thing, and then
how does he afford so many playthings though?
Partially because he doesn't care about money, actually. That's the funny thing about
him. That's always good.
It's like he just cares about his projects and the vision. Yeah. And then implausibly he bought Twitter and turned it into X and pulled out all the guts of the censorship apparatus. And you know, his own description of Twitter 1.0, which I didn't know, I suspect something was wrong, was that he said it was basically a machine with security state, that it was entirely run by basically the FBI and the CIA, you know, before. Yeah. And that's why you felt so alone, and is why, you know, when I was tweeting out opposition lockdowns all through 2020. I felt like, you know, I was the only guy in existence or something, like what turned out not to be true. You know, so it very well could be that the trust and safety team at Twitter 1.0 was, you know, deleting 4 out of 5 posts. You know, I mean, it's just crazy. Or harming 3/5 of its users.
Oh, I sense it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing, especially now. Twitter's amazing because, like, the other day, Tedros and Hillary Clinton, they posted a picture of themselves together to promote vaccines or some incredible nonsense like that.
Right.
And I went through the comments, like, every single one, like 100% were putting them down and making fun of them, that sort of thing. And the same thing when Bud Light posts an update or whatever. It's overwhelmingly. So these are the people that are previously censored. Anyway.
But how safe is that to have just that one place? I mean,
oh, it's not. It's our free speech rights are resting on such a very thin little foundation at this point. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. We're waiting to find out what Supreme Court says on the Missouri Biden injunction, and they're going to hear oral arguments in now less than a month. But we don't know how that vote's going to go. If it goes the wrong way, the agencies are going to be able to have their way with us and all digital platforms, and we're going to impose a censorship much worse than we ever saw in 2020. It's going to get terrible. Right. So we have to depend on these judges. We didn't vote for them. You know, we don't even know who these people are. You know, there's no real predicting the outcome of this. Maybe it's going to be 9-0 one way or the other. We really don't know. Or maybe it's going to be 4-5. And so that's how thin our free speech rights are. And we're having to rely now on really just a handful of technologies.
Oligarch billionaires. Bumble, I mean, we don't like Bill Gates, you know, because Bill Gates.
One thing I would say is that Elon is not making... Rumble doesn't make money. Elon does not make Twitter. X is not profitable. It's a long way from profitability. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these, and Substack is not profitable. It's some profitable for some writers and things. So these aren't they're not lucrative enterprises like Microsoft or Apple, you know, or Amazon, you know. So, they're kind of just, but what troubles me is that we only have really, like, it seems like a half a dozen venues, but everything.
That's it, though. You mentioned, I want to slow you down for a second so everyone's getting what you're saying. Twitter, Rumble, Substack. Really the only existing entities for free speech.
Yeah, and then you have others lower tier like Gab and you know, these other things. But then you have these television stations, you have News Nation or somebody like that, One America News and NTD and so on, and then Epoch Times. So, I mean, we're but really you can count them on two hands, okay?
Yeah.
So this is very scary against this hegemon Goliath that somehow had the power to shut down the entire world to prepare it for mRNA shots and digital learning. I mean, it's a great reset of 15-minute cities and EVs. It's unbelievable that we're living through these times. And so I'm really grateful for this dissident army that's out there, you know, of which you're included, but the stakes are very stacked against us. I mean, if we survive this, and really, this is a battle. And if any of your listeners don't understand it, they should. I mean, this is it. This is the battle of our times, and we're talking about the battle for fundamental free speech rights, and it's very distressing. That we have so few institutions that on which we can rely on. Can they be corrupted? Yes, they certainly can. But it's at this point, you know, it's kind of all we have. I'll tell you, we have one other thing too, which is that the technologies that were deployed on us, really forced on us over the last 4 years, the Great Reset technologies and everything that went with it, have all failed. and they're in the process of being discredited. And this is true for mRNA technology. In the early days, people said, well, this isn't the right shot, but mRNA platform technology is the wave of the future. Are we sure about that? I mean, the amount of discredit and public anger towards these shots globally is extremely intense. I'd be surprised if they ever recover. And I'll tell you, the EV thing is very much part of the lockdown economies. I mean, what happened is,
tell me about that. And this is electronic vehicles, because you've been posting about this.
Here's the important point, just to reconstruct the history, and I'll try to reduce it to a very quick story. But the lockdowns happened, and so that froze all the supply chains around the world. And American car manufacturers were relying on just-in-time inventory, so they couldn't. And they couldn't order the chips, or they didn't want to order the chips because they did just in time. So, and this went on, and these lockdowns happened. They went on and on and on. Well, by the time, basically a year later, the car market started to pick up again. But all the existing cars were gone from lots, and the American chip manufacturers. This happened actually in late 2020, the car manufacturers started writing this company, Send Us Your Chips. Well, they didn't have any chips. They had already retooled for gaming and Zoom and all the rest of this crap. So they didn't have any chips. So they weren't able to complete things. But there was a sense of chaos in the world. There were no cars on lots. You couldn't get them. The used car market was soaring. And manufacturers said, well, there's a big reset, and we're facing now a Biden administration which is throwing billions and billions and billions of dollars to subsidize the EVs. Let's just make EVs. So they did. And then consumers who were desperate because they hadn't been able to have a car, they were already starved for transportation needs, went to lots, and they said, well, I'll take that EV. Okay, they got the EV. Well, then it turns out that they're not good for long-term, long-range travel. Most publicly available charging stations that are often broken. There's long lines.
Terrible.
You nick the battery, you suddenly have to trash the car. Replacing that battery is $21,000. It doesn't work in cold weather. If you get too many passengers, the mileage collapses. There's all these problems that it turns out that Elon was right, that the EV is a really great second car for suburban commuters who are well-to-do.
Nice little status car, a little golf cart to drive around the community, let everyone know that you care about the sustainability and you're rich.
Right, and you're a homeowner, you can plug it in overnight. It works for you. Yeah, it's a very fancy golf cart. So that's the way the market, but it wasn't going to take over anything. And so consumers have gradually realized this. Mm-hmm. And this, Shanna, has happened over the last, I would say, 6 months. I mean, it's been a dramatic, one for the ages, boom and bust of a technology.
Really?
And it's immense. And so the whole thing is melting in real time, and you get a sense from the financial press, but not entirely the extent of it, hints here and there. But rental car places are returning the cars because people don't want to rent them. The only one toy car company avoided this crap, and it was Toyota, but the rest of them threw themselves into it. They've all changed their plans. They're desperately trying to keep their subsidies by making hybrids, but people don't even want hybrids. They're like, give me my internal company. But here's the key. As part of this thing with the EVs, of course, the battery making experienced this huge boom. And so in Western Australia, there's all of the resource mining was reallocated to focus on lithium and nickel.
Okay.
These batteries. When you look at the price charts, it's like this huge peak. The prices of these resources went up 150% and peaked in 2022, and then started to fall, and then started to fall. Right now, we're hitting rock bottom. So the prices of lithium are down 90% from their peak.
Wow.
And nickel has fallen 50% last time I checked, but it was already down 14% for the day. So you've got all these mines in Australia that retooled everything for making batteries. the demand for them has fallen out. So they're having to completely get rid of everybody who's associated and retool all their mining. Again, they're shutting down their lithium and nickel mines because they can't, again, nickel mines because they cannot make it work. And the forecasts for this industry are grave. I mean, just terrible. Far worse than that's being reported. So now, just the big picture here. You have here an industry that was entirely artificial.
Yes.
Born of a kind of a lockdown panic, artificial shortage of cars, born of supply chain breaks.
Tons of hype, yeah. Hype, subsidy.
Artificial consumer demand based on fraudulent claims that this is even better. This is the car of the future. The EV is basically what, you know, to cars, what the waterbed is to beds,
right?
In the 1970s and 80s. So it's,
well,
not,
it's the poster child for the Great Reset too, in all of the new 15-minute cities. You're not going to go anywhere, so why wouldn't you need anything but a golf cart? Like, it's indicative and emblematic of everything they want for us is in the EV, which is why I think why you're kind of homing in on this. And
it was one of the technology, but probably you're right, the premier, you know, highlight. Yeah. We're not going to have gas anymore, we're all going to be driving around these things. It's not working. And the thing is that the failure has been fast and calamitous and overwhelming. It is a far bigger bust than the housing bust in 2008.
Yeah.
It is happening much faster in real time, to the point that it's creating legitimate full-scale panic in multiple industries at once. The people who make the charging stations, the miners who mine the lithium and the nickel, and the car manufacturers themselves who are in a position of deeply discounting. The used EV market is now flooded, and the prices are in free fall. People cannot get rid of these cars fast enough. So this is what's happening, Shannon. So this is a calamity that closely parallels the disaster of the mRNA shots.
Yeah.
Which you know, after the first booster, people just said, look, I don't want these things. And now the uptake is a disaster, and these companies' stocks are falling dramatically and have been.
Yeah.
But nothing compared to what's happened to the EV market. So these are two major technologies of the Great Reset. And I'm just telling you, it is not working. It's not long for this world. And it's turned out to be a complete calamity for the ruling class establishment interests that threw everything into this. Now, if they lose the censorship thing too, I don't know what to say. And if they lose the politics thing too, I don't know what to say. So we live in very strange times.
Yes, we do. And just brilliant analysis. Thank you so much, Jeffrey. And this is why we have you on the program, because what you're, the example of the electric vehicle, a completely fraudulent market propped up by governments, propped up by marketing propaganda, subsidized heavily, shoved down people's throats, similar to the mRNA. And I think what you're explaining here, and this is why I always try to take, you know, politics and culture outside of the elections in November, because that's such a small part of what is happening right now across the globe, culturally and societally. Is that you're seeing now this, even in the US, if we aren't articulating it with our words, humans, you're seeing this massive pushback. And here you have industry, companies, corporations, business people in the middle between these elite government organizations, NGOs, the bankers, the banksters, the subsidizers in DC, and the consumers, this great swath of hundreds of millions, billions of people across the world that are buying and selling in this very complex economic system. And it seems to me, Jeffrey, like the manufacturers, industry cashed in with the big guys, right? The elites told them, this is the wave of the future. It's going to be bugs for dinner, electronic vehicles, 15-minute cities, where the fusion of human biology and nanotechnology and the transhuman, and they sold them this bill of goods and said, hey, buy all in on this. And what's happening is they're being punished by the market. The market now is punishing the businesses for buying in with the elites.
And on that point, a good example is these digital platforms. These are very significant test cases.
Yeah.
So Zuckerberg, when Elon took over Twitter, And you know, tore out the guts of the thing and threw out all the FBI agents and everything, and it was having free speech, quasi free speech, and still working on it. But it's, you know, really, it wasn't part of the game plan. So Zuckerberg, genius that he is, having utterly failed to create his metaverse,
I know. Crash and burn.
decided to establish his own version of. So just keep in mind, we're talking about rarefied elites. These are the clean people who don't want to be touched by any dirty, Trumpy, you know, right-wing Christian crap, right? So
Rarefied elites. Yep.
they're very precious. They only hang around with each other, and they only want to hear what each other has to say. That's it. So they thought there would be this, but they keep getting their interests confused with the public interest, which is a huge mistake. So Zuckerberg decides, oh, I really like the old Twitter. I'll recreate the old Twitter on within my own company, Facebook Meta. And so he started this thing called Threads. And Threads was advertised basically as a censored platform. Come join my censored platform.
Clean speech over at Threads. Come on, one and all.
And incredibly, this stupid thing was rolled out with the benefit of huge media hype.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
there was a story above the fold in the Wall Street Journal that said, suddenly Zuckerberg is cool again.
No, he's not. And neither are you, Wall Street
That's
Journal.
really interesting that you, Mr. Reporter, have discerned that
Yeah,
Zuckerberg
what's
is cool
cool?
again. And so what Zuckerberg did is he gave it every fair chance. He
Funny.
utterly and completely pillaged the Instagram
Yes.
app users
Yeah.
to market this bogus product. And so everybody who was on Instagram got notifications, ah, join Threads, join Threads.
Yeah.
Well, in a fortnight, Threads was dead. I mean, it was
Yep.
completely dead. And not only that, but people started deleting Instagram, their Instagram, because they were so disgusted that Zuckerberg was deploying Instagram
Oh,
as a
yeah.
method to get everybody onto his great censored platform that everybody hates. And I guess it still exists, but I mean, honestly, does it?
Yeah.
It failed so fast. And so Instagram is the number one most deleted app on the planet Earth now. Even now, nobody wants it. So the thing has been discredited. So here's what's interesting about that story. It shows that there's no market for censored platforms outside the rarefied Northeastern Ivy graduated credentialed ruling
Right.
class elite and their little tiny social circles. Okay,
Mm
they want a censored platform, but nobody else does. So their models are not working for mass distribution, insofar as we live in a society that depends on the acquiescence and cooperation of the consuming public, they don't stand a chance. Whether
Yes.
it's
Yes.
Threads or mRNA or EVs or their fake meat or or eating bugs, I mean, none of it is flying. It's not working. The consumer marketplace is crushing it, and this is a major problem.
This is a hu I mean, this is a huge perspective and a huge story, and you are articulating something that I have been sensing now for many, many months as one vaunted new 21st century sustainable product after another just crashes and burns. In fact, I retweeted Jeffrey over the weekend, a guy named Kyle Kemper, who was playing a game of life with his little kids, and one of the cards that his daughter picked up said, "Start a cricket farm. Insects are the protein of the future. Pay 30,000 to the bank." Right? Like, this is how much play they have. They can get a card and the game of life distributed by Milton Bradley that perpetuates their propaganda and feeds their markets, and these guys still can't get a hold on the market. And
I
it
know. Look,
shows something
but
very distorted.
what's remarkable about the times in which we live, Shannon, I know you feel it, and many of your listeners do too, and everybody does, that we didn't know the extent of the corruption. We didn't know fully, but now that we know, we're on the lookout for it, so we can tell. And they're really obvious.
Radar.
Yeah, you develop this ability. So, you know, this morning, Wired was pushing out a story that said, I swear this reminds me of something from the movie Reds. It was when Jack Reed, you know, says to, you know, his communist colleagues, did you really think we could do this without bloodshed and terror? And, you know, you have to break eggs to make omelets, you know, those kind of stuff. Did you really think establishing communism was just going to be so easy, just a salon? No. Wired this morning had a story that said, the full transition to EVs was always going to be much harder than we thought. So this temporary setback.
Don't let it
discourage you. We've still got ways to go. Okay, yeah. So why is Wired, which used to be this kind of trusted voice in technology, clearly just echoing, you know, establishment, state-written, you know, security, you know, Great Reset propaganda. Why are they doing this? Well, yeah. I think it's obvious. I mean, they have been a capped, you know, Oregon of the ruling class, a national security state now for a long time. I mean, they're completely compromised. Mm-hmm. And how many other venues can we say this about? I mean, probably the whole of the Condé Nast Empire.
Yeah.
Certainly Rolling Stone. And I've learned things about this too. I didn't entirely understand the way, I wished I had studied it more. Maybe I did as an undergraduate and just forgot about it. But the way intelligence works, CIA and intelligence.
Oh, it's so fascinating. Yeah.
They want to occupy everything, you know, every sector of opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want to be perceived as right wing or left wing or for this or against that. They want to have positions of influence in every think tank from every point of view and every.
Right.
But they're also a little bit stupid and ham-handed. So they tend to go for these popular, really popular venue, like why did Rage Against the Machine have vaccine mandates at their concert?
Right.
Okay, so yeah. I mean, so you know, that should lead you to believe that there's something fishy going on. Why is Rage Against the Machine actually a tool of the deep state? Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you're the deep state, that's what you do. Like, let's get to that. There's, I know a band called Rage Against the Machine that could be very useful to us. So it is with Rolling Stone. Remember those hippies? Oh yeah. Rolling Stone. They were for, you know, like, you know, weed and stuff. You know, draft riots and things. Yeah. They'd be good for it. They're a trusted venue among them. Perfect. Let's get them. And so, you know, next thing you know, they're raging against, you know, the Rolling Stones running articles against the Great Barrington Declaration.
Yeah.
Wait, what? Yeah. So this is how it works. But it's been fun. Now that you know how to interpret the signs and signals, now you can see who's who and what's what, and discern what's coming next based on the kinds of things they write, which.
Yeah.
Initially, you read it and you think, that doesn't sound quite right to me. But then you realize that it's actually not quite right at all. It's just a piece of propaganda that's constructed to manipulate you by some very powerful people that aspire to control the world. And they're trying to use you and play with your brain. So I'm sort of glad to know this, actually.
Me too.
I mean,
it's
terrifying.
But somewhat.
But it's good to know the way the world works. I'd rather deal with reality than live in an illusion.
Yeah. And I think there was always this suspicion that was what went on, you know, at least from my perspective. But, you know, it's only recently that I've actually been able to see it, witness it with my own eyes in different ways where I can say, yeah, this definitely happens. And it's really mostly just about controlling narratives and securing strongholds so that you can have more money and more power. I mean, it really We tend to think, oh, this is like some super, super scary conspiracy. It really is just the way of the world. It's how it's always been.
It's been far more effective than I ever imagined. I made a huge mistake in the course of my career and always thinking that government is lumbering and stupid and idiotic and incompetent and never has any idea what it's doing. That every office in government operates like the DMV or the post office. Okay, I always believe that. Well, the problem with that perspective is it blinds you to actual plots that are, in a weird way, strangely coordinated and highly effective. And and that it was very effective in 2020. The problem is, I would say all the way up till actually relatively recently, 2023 was the year when everything really fell apart. And now we're living in times where we're just seeing, we're living amidst the rubble, really. You think about just the range of failure. I mean, they've for a century, the elites have been telling us that they're going to do, if we turn over our the education of our children to them, they'll make them smart and brilliant. And and then they shut down the schools, and now they've destroyed a generation of students, and the learning metrics for this whole generation of school kids is catastrophic beyond belief. So that's what they did. And they said that we're going to protect the public health by closing your gyms and public parks. And health is worse than ever. Or you've got to stay home with your sick relatives rather than go to an air-conditioned office to protect yourself from a virus. And it turns out that it's 2.5 more times likely to get infected, you know, at home. So it's on issue after issue, and we could list 1,000 of these things, that none of this has worked, and all of it turns out to be complete lies. And thank goodness for whatever remnants of free speech we have. And they're but they're there because we can discover this stuff. And it's going to be that kind of discovery that is going to make life, and is in fact making life, very difficult for the ruling class plotters at this point.
That is such an optimistic message, Jeffrey, that I really appreciate coming from you. And I think you can see that optimism, and you can see a path forward, a light at the end of the tunnel, only when you omit yourself from the two-party political institutions and not see them as the solution, or Washington, D.C. as the solution, but rather the great consumer, right? The masses. When you see your fellow Americans and their buying and spending habits and their decision-making that they make every day on a regular basis in very small ways in their own communities, when you see that as the way out of this, rather than hoping and praying for a candidate to come in and save us, then you can begin to see the larger picture and say, okay, there are solutions to all of this. They just might not come from
where it's hard to break old habits too, but you know, these are times to do it because we've learned so much. So it's, I think what a lot of people are finding is that they're gradually, day by day, deconstructing their old habits and wondering about them. You know, why am I shopping at Whole Foods instead of Aldi? Why am I not using baking soda to brush my teeth? Yeah, I mean, look, it doesn't matter what it is. Yeah. I mean, it could be any aspect of anything that you're doing that you need to rethink in light of, wait, why was I doing this most of my life? How do I know that I haven't just been being lied to? Like, look at my medicine cabinet. Look at all these meds. Are they actually making me better? What about that shrink that I pay to improve me? How do I know he's not actually making me worse?
Yeah.
And so on it goes. So like there's, and everybody's lives are different, but this is, you know, we have different habits, different family structures, different everything. But it's a time to sort of look critically at every aspect of how you manage your life and wonder to what extent you've been lied to about so many things. I mean, and be open-minded about it, because, you know, like I said, we live in a time where there's no reason to trust any elite authorities at any level of society anywhere in the world right now. Yeah. That's just the truth.
That's
what
just
does that mean in your life? It's different, but it's going to require critical thinking, a willingness to change, a willingness to investigate the truth, and then the boldness to act on it.
Amazing words of wisdom. Yeah, thank you, Jeffrey Tucker, and this is why we have him on. It was a scripture in the Gospels. Jesus Christ told his disciples to be wise as serpents and gentle as doves. And that always resonated with me, because I'm like, you know what? We're not supposed to be dumb. we're supposed to be skeptical. And we are supposed to question people and question authority and question the narratives. And yes, at times assume that maybe there's a plot. Maybe there is a conspiracy of people with like interests who would like more money and more power and more resources, and they get together and come up with ways to achieve that. And I think that we now have to accept that it's not this unacceptable position to say, hey, you know, there was something that was planned and rolled out to, you know, whatever their agenda was. I think that just getting over that hump is a step forward, and 100% that, you know, question everything and even yourself and even, you know, long held beliefs. I've had to do that as well, Jeffrey. I know that you have as well. When we come back, we're going to finish out this conversation, real quick segment. We're going to let you go, but, to your point of kind of everything the institutions want us to go after seems to be collapsing, I rolled out a poll on my Twitter page, which is populated mostly a lot of medical freedom people, Jeffrey, but mostly conservative, right-leaning audience, I would say, on the Shannon Joy Show Twitter page. And I rolled out a poll to ask them if they would even consider voting for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as an option in November of 2024. It's very surprised at the results. When we come back, I'll fill you in on that.
Yeah, let's talk about that. It's very interesting.
Yeah, and we'll end on that bright note. We'll be back in a moment to continue this discussion with our good friend, Jeffrey Tucker. Hello, world. Welcome to the Shannon Joy Show. Well, darn it, I pressed the wrong button. That was supposed to be a shell shock read, but that was the outro of my show. These are the perils of self-help production, Jeffrey Tucker. But that's okay. It's a nice little intro outro anyway. We'll figure out what we're doing here.
Congratulations. I think it's thrilling you're doing your own production and so, you know, saving yourself $140,000.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you. Yeah, it's...
You pay yourself more.
Exactly. It's bumpy. No one ever knows what they're going to get on the show, Jeffrey. And so maybe that's why they tune in, because, you know, it's the wild, wild west over here with self-production. But no, it's been great. Being independent, you know, at some point, Jeffrey, I'd like to be part of a team. And I think that's in the future for me. It comes at a cost, and sometimes, you know, it's good to be independent and to kind of do your thing and then branch out. And right now, this is where God wants me. These are the cards that are dealt, and I've had to learn a lot, and I'm glad I've had to learn a lot with this. So,
well,
you know,
that's the thing about you, Shannon. You're always, I've noticed this about you, you're willing to put in the work. And you, there's nothing that you're not willing to learn. There's nothing you're not willing to do. I mean, if you owned a convenience store, you would be the one stocking the shelves and vacuuming the floor and mopping,
you know,
and checking out the customers and so on. So, I mean, that's, you probably would be working as a fry cook too. I mean, that's just so how you do.
Aww,
and that's your old fashioned values and your tenacity. And that's the kind of spirit that made this country so great. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's hard. It's hard to do what you do, but the advantages are great. And it's always true that, you know, this idea, like you said, well, I really would like to be part of a team. I'm tired.
Right.
Well, you are tired. But mm-hmm. I tell you what, if you're part of that team, you'll lose something. There's always a cost. And what you're doing right now is brilliant. It's also sadly rare in America. We just don't have that same work ethic, that same willingness. I'm sure you get this all the time from people. Hey, Shannon, how do I do what you've done?
I do.
I'm sorry to report that you're going to have to spend a lot of time in training. You're probably going to have to spend 60 hours a week in front of a thing. You're going to have to be reading manuals and watching videos while you're cooking dinner.
That's right. Toss off a few platforms, Jeffrey, with no safety net underneath you. That tends to really, propel you to build safety nets everywhere, because, you know, you see it But yeah, definitely. Like,
so what happens is that people look at the results that you've achieved and say, I want those. Well, okay, you want the results, but do you want the work?
Yeah.
It's the people who are willing to do the work that end up achieving the goal. And you've shown that you're willing to do that.
Well, thank you, Jeffrey. And I appreciate that. And you too. I think that it's something rare, but I also think in the new 21st century economy, once we get rid of all these bad actors and we figure this stuff out and the market exerts its power on the manufacturers and the businesses, but also the elites, right? Because that's what we need to see happen. I think maybe there will be a market for human thought and hard work and those things.
You said I'm optimistic. You know what I'm optimistic about? I'm optimistic that we're not going to completely lose. Okay. Yeah. That's the source of my optimism. I'm enjoying this fight. But is there an end state in which we completely win? In heaven.
Yeah, right. It's right. Yeah. Never here. Never here. Yeah.
Not in this valley of tears.
That's right. That's right. Well, let's talk about, you know, from an optimistic perspective, I'm very curious. Again, one of my larger themes is I do believe that the two-party political system has been completely corrupted and that the D's and the R's are basically working for the same people. It's a power-sharing arrangement. They occupy office. They get rich. All of their friends get rich, and then they switch it over, and it's just one grift after another. And so necessarily, if we are to have democracy in this country and actual elections and representative democracy in any capacity, we do need to rein in whatever the electoral system has become. In 2024, regardless of what happens in November, I think the emergency of Bobby Kennedy Jr. onto the marketplace of ideas, politically speaking, is a benefit because it has the impact of pushing the two candidates into discussing things that they do not want to talk about. COVID-19. Yeah. So I ran go ahead.
I will never tire of explaining this between now and November. And I don't care how many times I explain it, people will not listen to me. But it is a hardcore truth about voting that people do not vote for the person they want. They vote strategically and mostly against the person that they fear the most. That is what drives people to vote.
Yes.
People who vote for Trump are terrified of Biden. There's not anybody who's going to vote for Biden. No person will vote for Biden. They will vote against Trump. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is why these polls don't matter in the slightest bit. They're always asking polls, you know, like who's your favorite candidate? And people can have a favorite candidate. That does not mean that that's what they're going to do when it comes to voting. People, and this is why at the end of the campaigns, there's always this manipulations. It's always about the terrible consequences that are going to happen if you fail to vote for this guy, because then this guy will win. And people are not stupid. They figure this out, and so they vote strategically.
Right.
So this is what's driving this. And so you can have somebody like Bobby Kennedy with overall far favorable opinions towards him. Which is true. He's pulling very high, and in terms of favorability, it's killing Trump and Biden. But what is that going to mean for the election? It confronts this problem that people might believe that a vote for RFK passes up a chance for them to weigh in against Trump or against Biden. And that is what's going to reduce his vote totals dramatically. It's just a law. It's called Duviger's law of winner take all voting strategies, which is repeated. I don't care if it's, you know, I could repeat it. If I had a house full of guests and said, I have three flavors of ice cream, strawberry, chocolate and vanilla, but the winner takes all and the majority decides. I promise you that either chocolate or vanilla will win and strawberry will not, even if everybody in the room favored strawberry. And the reason for that is the perception that either vanilla or chocolate's going to win and everybody either loves or hates one of those flavors.
It's fascinating.
So strawberry will always lose. Okay.
Yeah.
This is, I promise you, it's called Duverger's Law.
Okay.
RFK is strawberry.
Mm.
And that's a problem going into a winner take all voting system. This is why we have two parties. It always devolves to two parties. Now, does that mean it's impossible? Not really. I mean, Ross Perot got 15% of the vote, yeah, right, last time. So
can I pause you for a second?
Mm-hmm.
What if there's a scenario, you talk about what people fear the most, they vote against something as opposed for something, right? So what if there is such a disgust and disdain and frustration among enough Americans for both parties, what I described to you there, where...
But they're not the same level of disgust. This
you don't
is the
think
problem.
It's okay.
No, you might despise both Trump and Biden, but I promise you, there's not indifference, okay? So it's like, yeah, but who are you disgusted by the most? And it's like, well, I have to think about that.
And so interesting.
And so they're not the same levels of disgust. There's no such thing, you know. You might hate both vanilla and chocolate and really love strawberry. But if you believe that either vanilla or chocolate is going to win, now you're put in a position of having to overcome your indifference. And you're like, you know, I can't stand either, but if I had to have one, I guess I'd choose vanilla.
Oh, gosh, it always works. Right. Yeah.
So this is a problem. I'm not saying that dooms the RFK president. I don't think it does. And it's possible that he could get enough affection, enough fame that people are willing to forego their biggest fears and support him. That is possible. I'm just saying that is a lot to overcome there.
Yeah, I think that's why I would say for his strategy, I think the most effective strategy would to be present the two parties as two sides of the same coin, the same political system, the same political corruption. And, you know, obviously, I'm the outsider coming in. I think that if there were, in terms of an independent candidate, probably has the most likelihood of making a dent, it would be him, given the cultural and political atmosphere that we're experiencing today and just the very volatile nature of 2024. But I would say, Jeffrey, and this surprised me in my conservative, and to your point, this is my own poll that I ran, you know, 2,600 respondents. And the question was, would you consider voting for RFK Jr.?
That's a decent question, yeah.
And that was all it was. The choices were absolutely. The second choice was no way in hell. And the third choice was, I'm not sure. Absolutely polled at 50%. So there was a strong positive vibe.
No, it's definitely there. There are things about the RFK platform that he needs, I think, to fix. And those are the sort of remnants of certain, I would call them like left-wing fabulism that he continues to carry around with him. He's dealt, I think, effectively with the gun rights thing, and I think very persuasively. And that's been good. But I'm telling you, and I love RFK, and his attention to the science and his focus on the administrative state is just amazing. His book called The Wuhan Cover-Up is a masterpiece of our age, and everybody should read it. But he's accepted some of the fairy tales of the left concerning oil and gas and industry and energy. And I've heard him say on several interviews that we can power the whole world with sunbeams and breezes, and it's just false.
Yeah, I haven't heard that, but yeah, that's right.
And so he's really, again, I love him. And I would say everything I'm saying to you, to him personally, I have complete respect for him. That he needs to get home that message. Yeah, he's even aside from the message, he needs to rethink the subject. He's just wrong about this.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with the energy source beneath our feet. It can be dug up cleanly, and it helps the poor. And it's the building block of the modern world. Vivek Ramaswamy is exactly right about this. I think you can get carried away with this message. You know, I'm not shilling for the oil and gas industry, but come on, let's get serious.
Yeah.
And I don't want to see RFK's ideological biases being used by great resetters, you know.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
By the way, he's been great on, he's even corrected the climate change thing, but he's still got But he's still got further to go on this energy thing. It's a serious problem. It's going to cut into his market for people who understand reality.
I agree with you. I hear that all the time from my followers and people on the live chat who are, again, open to him, but certainly they have a lot of questions. And I would love to, you know, ask him a few questions about that. We'll see if I can work that out at some point.
I don't know what happened, but sometime like 30 years ago, and I'm not really running in those circles, but in elite left-wing circles, it just became kind of a matter of doctrine that oil and gas have to go. I mean, this is, I don't know how they came up with this, but, and then this whole climate change narrative, first global warming, but that became falsifiable, so they changed the climate change. That became just a kind of a rubric, you know, to sell this abolitionist message. And it's very strange. It's discrediting their outlook, but but within those circles, if you question that basic doctrine, that the world should be run by wind turbines and solar panels, then you're going to be written out of their movement. I mean, this is so central to center-left ideology today. I don't understand how it came from because it's completely wrong. But they all believe it. And unfortunately, RFK comes out of the world. He just kind of accepted that.
Yeah, I think he does need to fix that. And I see this contest less about what happens on November 5th and more about the messaging and the conversations had between now and November 5th, right? Like, I see it as an opportunity for organization and connection. And, you know, especially if you're looking at the Mike Benz interview with Tucker Carlson and really looking critically at these elections and saying, I mean, how rigged are they? How rigged is the messaging? Like, I think you just have to kind of take it all with a grain of salt. I think, you know, I'm crazy, but I think that with the right messaging, and I think you're absolutely right, he needs to clean up the whole climate change sustainability narrative and do it very clearly and do it in a way where he's saying to people, listen, this is what I said before. I have access now to new information and experience and ideas, and I'm shifting because this makes sense now, and this is my pledge. Then I think, you know, and I think it would be actually very, very good for this country to see a third party candidate actually make a dent, maybe hit double digits in terms of vote gathering. It places pressure on the two political parties. Mm-hmm. At the very least, they get uncomfortable. Because they're seeing someone eat their lunch, they're seeing someone kind of eat into their time, and it forces them also to, you know, hit Bobby Kennedy on the debate stage. I think is worth the whole thing, the whole campaign, win or lose, doesn't matter. You can get him on the debate stage with these guys.
If there is going to be a debate stage, I mean, there's nothing in the law that requires that there's going to be debates.
I can't believe that we live in this society where we don't even have debates in America anymore.
Well, we didn't know this, I thought that debates were just part of campaigns. Well, it turns out they're dispensable. I mean, Trump didn't show up to any of the debates. Okay. Why? Well, he didn't want anybody questioning his COVID response. That was the main reason. That was it.
Well, and he didn't have to because the entirety of conservative media ran cover for Trump.
Yeah.
They ran cover for him. That really irritated me. They gave softball questions. And that just really bugged me. But all right, Jeffrey Tucker.
It was a disaster. We'll see if there's going to be debates. Now, one possible scenario that I don't think we've mentioned here is the idea that RFK's presence in the race would deny Biden or Trump the necessary number of electors to actually secure a victory. In that case, according to the Constitution, it would fall to the House of Representatives, I think that's the way it works, to pick the president. And some people are positing that possibility, you know. And wow, wouldn't that be something? I mean, I think anything's possible at this point.
Anything's possible. Well, I hope that anything's possible. I hope that there's disruption. This, you know, to your point, I think that what we need is disruption, not chaos and people going, you know, burning cities, but just changing your consumption habits, your buying habits, the way that you're living, the way you're discussing ideas, the news media outlets that you're following, the information, where you're getting it. I think that everything, I think we just need to throw it all on the kitchen table and reassess everything. And hopefully that can happen this year with voices like yours, with new third-party candidates, with new options in industry, with parallel institutions and businesses like the Wellness Company and Shellshock CBD that support this show, among others. We're going to be introducing some new advertisers in March that I'm super, super excited about. And we just got to keep plugging on, telling the truth, doggedly pursuing that truth, and never, ever, 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 ever giving up. And I know you never will either, Jeffrey Tucker. Real quickly, as we close out the show, let people know how they can support you and where they can go to make sure that you guys have all of the resources that you need to continue your very important work.
Brownstone.org is my baby, and I love it. And I always appreciate when people subscribe.
Yeah.
We send one email a week, but at least it allows us to get in contact with you. If every third party app, you know, goes down, at least that's a way you can reach us and we can reach you. So I think that's the best thing to do. Just subscribe.
Okay. All right. So go to brownstone.org and subscribe. I'm a subscriber to Brownstone. I can tell you they do not overwhelm your inbox. You are not going to get any type of third party ads or anything like that. One email a week, to your point, and it's a very informative email, really thoughtfully done, and it's an overview of everything, all of the good work that they've done over there. So I can vouch for that. And then once you start getting into their pipeline of distribution, that's when you will want to support them financially, because you're going to see how great the work is that comes out of that organization, because you're the best. You're the best. So brownstone.org, and of course, follow Jeffrey on Twitter. Twitter, if I'm going to be Jeffrey Tucker, follow him on the twit. I'm going to start calling it Twitter. This is why I was so irritated that they changed it to X. I'm like, how is Jeffrey Tucker ever going to talk about Twitter again when it has to be X?
Shannon.
CJP Rumble says on the live chat, does Jeffrey Tucker have sneakers? I'll buy his sneakers. He wants
to- I have some very, very, very old-fashioned sneakers. You know, like in the movie Chariots of Fire. That's my preferred sneaker style, right?
Amazing. Amazing. Such great work. Such great work. Thank you so much, Jeffrey, for being with us. We'll have you again in a few weeks as normal. Thank you, everyone, for being with us today on the Shannon Joy Show. As I mentioned before, we are independent. So appreciate your support of the Shannon Joy Show. Please go to theshannonjoy.com, theshannonjoy.com. If you appreciate these conversations and these discussions, yeah, they're outside of the box. They're outside of the fray. They're outside of the left-wing media and right-wing media, Conservative Inc., Con Inc., Bizarro Con, you name it. We're just diligently searching for truth here at the Shannon Joy Show. It is me, myself and I, and then a small team of contractors that I work with to help put everything together. And we couldn't do it if it weren't for all of you. So please consider those monthly contributions. And again, it's like $5 a month, $10 a month that most of you contribute, that just gives us that the resources to continue to grow this platform and invest in the platform, secure it so that we can be around for a long time to come. Also, of course, if you don't want to support the Shannon Joy Show with those contributions, you can always go shopping and use the products and the services that we advertise here on the show. Right now, we're working with Shellshock CBD, John Burke, an amazing company. Again, I've mentioned the Rack Out, Sleep Aid, it's melatonin, plus CBD, non-THS, and I, or THC, and I absolutely love it. I am a total convert. I've been using it for months, and it works. If you are having trouble sleeping, it knocks you right out. Also, we're going to be talking about our good friends over at the Wellness Company this month as well, moving into March, and obviously their emergency kits. Again, they have the first aid kit. That's the red one. They have their new contagion emergency kit. That's the black one that includes hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, among other necessary medications. Also, the free nebulizer, and then their old-fashioned medical emergency kit, which does include the ivermectin, among other necessary prescriptions that you'll need just to give you peace of mind. You never know what they're going to throw at you. So please go to the Shannon, or no, get no, the website is getwellwithshannonjoy.com. That is getwellwithshannonjoy.com, and make sure that you use that promo code Shannon Joy, because that will get you 10% off, not only at Shellshock CBD, but also at the Wellness Company as well. So thank you, everyone. so much for all of your support and the really fantastic live chat. You guys are the best. Tomorrow it's going to be just me, so we will hopefully chat a little bit more on the live chat right here on Rumble. And then on Wednesday, Denis Rancourt is going to join us here in the Joy Virtual Studio to talk about the science, all things science behind the COVID-19 virus, the vaccine, and the debates within the scientific medical freedom community about those touchy subjects, like did the virus ever exist in the first place? So again, we're not afraid to have those conversations and ask those questions. I think more free speech is always the best free speech. And so we're going to give Denis a platform here to ask him a lot of those questions. So please share this with everyone you know. Give us a thumbs up. Follow this show on Rumble right now so that you never miss an episode. We're live every day right here on Rumble at 11 a.m. Eastern time. Usually start around 11:11 because I'm always late, but that's okay. And we go for, it's supposed to be an hour, but I always end up going a lot longer. So thank you guys so much for being with us. We will be back tomorrow to do it all again right here on The Shannon Joy Show. Hey everyone, Shannon Joy for Connecta Mobile. So when I started my show 10 years ago, I would talk to my friends about privacy and the Fourth Amendment, and they would look at me like I had three heads. Now, fast forward to 2024, post-COVID, and everyone is talking about privacy. We are freaked out by AI, grossed out by government surveillance, and very aware that data is the new gold. Combine that with the new reality that your whole life and all of your data is on your phone and in the palm of your hands, making you a sitting duck for common hackers, corporate hustlers, or government spies. Are you going to let them get away with that? Well, I'm not. And that's why I use my Connecta mobile phone as the official business phone for Joy Media. That's because Connecta is the only phone company that specializes in security and privacy above all else. Call Connecta Mobile today and talk to a real person who lives in the United States about securing your devices and communications for as little as $35 a month. Their basic plan includes device encryption, encrypted text and data, also a free phone. That's just the beginning. Call 941-246-2156 to talk to a representative. That's 941-246-2156. Or go to phone123.com/joy today. That's phone123.com/joy. Get securely connected today only with Connecta.